Hi, this is Aaron Hart filling in for J. Marvin this morning on Friday. It's going to be cooler than it has been in the past. We're glad for that. It's 8:06. I would love to talk to you about Bushonomics, this latest study out of the Center for American Progress. This was written by senior fellow Scott Lilly. It is entitled Understanding Bushonomics, and to understand is to feel very afraid. But anyway, Scott Lilly is a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress who writes and does research on a wide range of areas, including governance, federal budgeting, national security, and the economy. He has spent more than 31 years working for the U.S. Congress in various capacities. And thank you for joining us this morning, Mr. Lilly. Thank you for very much.
It's good to be with you.
Now, in terms of this, I read the synopsis in its entirety and a bit of the report. I think the statistic that strikes me still so hard is the one that says that, you know, the Bush administration has touted we had strong economic growth. They're not doing that so much right now, but in any way, in the past they have. But as you note, the top 10% of the families in the United States counted for 95.3% of the nation's income growth between 2002 and 2006, that left the other 133 million families in America to divide up the 4.7% of the nation's income growth. And as we know, average real income for families in the bottom 90% may have increased by a little less than $30,700. But as you note, most of that increase went to people in the 80th to 90th percentiles. So in other words, most people's household income declined. I think people are really feeling that these days. Please speak about what your study on Into Bushonomics found.
Well, I think the lesson, and this is a lesson the country learned in the 1920s, that if you have strong economic growth and strong growth in worker productivity, and it's not evenly distributed, you eventually have the cogs of progress grind to a halt because you don't have the purchasing power in the hands of the people that will go out and buy things that need things. And so you have declining store sales, you have factories starting to lay off people, and you have banks that find out that they can't collect on their loans, all of which we're seeing. And I think the seeds of that go back to the beginning of the decade when wages were held flat and all of the income was being channeled either to corporations or very, very high income families.
The very, very highest income families, who I think it could be argued may need at least, I mean, there are 15,000 families, as you note, their annual income may have increased from $15 million a year to $29 million a year, but we're certainly not, as the Bush administration keeps claiming, that has not turned out to lead to more jobs for the American people, has it?
No, we've had fairly slow job growth. In fact, job growth hasn't really kept up with the growth in households or population, and so that's another problem. When you have weak job growth and flat wages, that means that family incomes decline, and they have declined since 2000.
Now, earlier in the show today, Scott Lilly, when you weren't here, obviously, but people were talking about Bill Clinton and his support of NAFTA and that NAFTA led us to a lot of the troubles with people losing their jobs. You talk about enforcement of trade agreements. I think many progressives are very concerned about what does this mean in terms, you know, what do trade agreements mean to us these days? And in a time when, as you note, U.S. employment manufacturing grew from 92 to 2000 by 445,000 jobs, or 3%, but manufacturing jobs have fallen by 3.7 million, more than 21%. That's astounding to me.
Well,
so what do we do about? How much are these trade agreements playing into that? Is my question too?
Well, I think you know, there's no question that's a huge part of it, and we've moved a lot of manufacturing from the United States to China. And we have, if you go, I quote in the report a statement that's on the Commerce Department website describing to American businesses trying to do business in China how the game is rigged and how foreign companies really don't stand a chance.
On the Commerce Department's website?
That's right. They,
oh, my goodness.
You know, they lay it out in considerable detail about how all of the factors that go into producing a product, the land, the building, the machinery, the labor, all of that is manipulated to lower the price so that they will always defeat anybody that's trying to compete against them. And they say, I'm quoting directly, Chinese competitors, particularly those from the state-owned sector, and virtually all of the businesses are state-owned in the end, often enjoy very low costs of capital. Thus, they can enter markets quickly, and they can expect to receive strong encouragement from the government for their efforts. The Chinese government makes no secret of its support for state-owned enterprises. Foreign companies should not expect a level playing field. Well, if that's true in terms of competing in China, it's equally true in terms of China's export sector, which
yes.
is 40% of their economy is export. And it's not only crippling the United States economy and our manufacturing sector, but it's affecting economies all over the world. We take the brunt of it, however. We account for 100% of China's trade surpluses because our deficit with them is so enormous.
And they're still loaning us money, and we're still in debt to them. What scares me, I don't know about you.
Well,
being so
there's no question
them.
That's you know, that's a growing problem, and it's also a problem that they're using a lot of this money that they're making off of U.S. exports to build very rapidly. Build an offensive military capability.
I think that scares me in the fact that they hold our paper. You know what I mean? What if they decide to say, okay, we're calling in the loan now, give us back our dough? And it's like, this report is quite comprehensive. It seems to me it covers minimum wage and, you know, enforcement of wage and hour laws, what's happened to unions. And you said that during that Senator Edward Kennedy said that this was that Robert Batista, the man Bush selected to run the National Labor Relations Board, I think you quote him as saying, is led the most anti-worker, anti-labor, anti-union board in history. So since Bushonomics is going to ripple through us for a long time, what recommendations would you make to the presumptive new president, who I hope to goodness is Barack Obama?
Well,
me personally, I'm not trying to put that on you.
I think the big issue is that we have to find a way to get more money in the pockets of ordinary consumers. And that means that when we have productivity growth in the workforce, that the workers need to get their share of that. That's happened in this country pretty consistently. Productivity growth and wage growth were equal to each other from 1950 to 1980. And it's only been in recent years that it started to decline, and no time since the 1920s has productivity growth just completely separated from wage growth. We had, since 2000, the productivity of the American worker has gone up 20%, and wages have gone up less than 2%. And that just simply means we're able to produce now a lot more than we're able to consume, and that's what gets an economy in trouble. It's the major explanation for the depression in the 20s and 30s, and we will go back down that path if we don't have a system where we share the products of people's work more fairly.
Well, how do you do that, though? Because apparently what big corporations are into these days is voting themselves at huge salaries, huge parachutes, and don't seem to have too much interest in running the company long term or realizing that their employees are some of their most valuable commodities, if you will.
Well, the irony of all this is even though we've had a major portion of the economic growth of the country going into corporate profits, that corporations in the end haven't done that well. The Standard & Poor's 500 index is now below where it was when George Bush took office. So we're just relearning the issue all over again, an economy that doesn't grow fairly is in the end not going to be a successful economy for anybody. And corporations are now paying a big price as hard as they try to compete around the world, their major income and their major market is here in the United States. And if American workers don't take home paychecks that allow them to buy what American companies produce, those companies aren't going to do very well.
Consumers are the principal engine of the economy in this country. So what recommendations would you make, Scott Lilly, senior fellow and with vast experience in government and service in our military? You've had a breadth of experience that's very deep and wide. What would you recommend as first steps that we could take?
Well, I think the first things we need to stop doing some of the things that we're doing right now, and those include, you know, trying to knock wages down. I think further increases in the minimum wage would help. I think we need to stop using government as a tool to punish labor unions. I think we need to enforce our trade laws so that American factories and American workers can compete fairly against workers around the world, rather than having state-owned companies subsidizing the competition in places like China. I think that's a good start. I think we need to have a strategy to try to keep more homeowners in their homes and slow the rate of foreclosure. The Congress just adopted legislation that moves in that direction, and perhaps more will be needed. I'm afraid that we're going to need further stimulus, and I hope it comes in the form of investments so that we can create jobs at the same time we're cleaning up our environment and reducing our dependence on foreign energy and repairing and rebuilding the infrastructure, the roads and
Yeah, rather than bridges, giving me $300 to $600, I'd rather they invest in, say, getting us off the ground in new inventive technologies for clean energy to bring to market, or building transmission lines from sea to sea so that we can use the vast amounts of wind energy in the middle of the country.
That's right. We've really allowed our investment in infrastructure and in people to deteriorate over the last 6 or 7 years, and we need to get back to that and make those investments. And I think at the same time, we can create good-paying jobs that will help to restore the capacity of consumers to go buy American products.
Well, we'll look forward to that happy day. Thank you for spending time with us and taking such a searing and good look at understanding Bushonomics. Thanks in no small part for helping me dispute some of the things that people try to claim about Bushonomics to me as a talk show host. I appreciate it. But it's really a very comprehensive report, and I appreciate your work, and I look forward to reading it in full. And thank you, Scott.
Anybody can find it on the Center for American Progress website.
Right, and that is AmericanProgress.org.
That's right.
Thank you very much, sir. I appreciate it. Have a good weekend, sir.
Same to you.
Thank you, Mr. Lilly. I'm Erin Hart. This is AM 760 Progressive Talk. That's Scott Lilly, Senior Fellow for the Center for American Progress. Once again, that website is AmericanProgress.org. Must reading. Full report. Amazing stuff. Sad, but good and searing. And I like his prescription for us. What do you think? And I want to talk lighter today, too, because it's Friday. So all that and more coming up on the Erin Hart version of the J. Marvin Show. It's 303-713-7600. We don't have any more guests planned. I was trying to get us that solar energy guy, but it didn't work out with his schedule. So it's all us. Yay, us. So we'll talk. We'll play sound. We'll have fun. We'll talk a little bit Olympics. Maybe we'll talk a little sports. We'll definitely talk a little bit about lighter topics as well. But I still issue the invitation to Hillary Rodham Clinton supporters all day today. It's your day. Tell us what you want. Tell us how you need to have a catharsis. Have it here, though, because I want energy and excitement for the convention, because we are going to need it. Back with more comments about Scott Lilly interview, too, coming up on AM 760 for Colorado's Progressive Talk. Time for traffic now with John Turk. Good morning. It's back to Just Us. I'm filling in for Jay Marvin this week, and thank you for making me feel so welcome, filling in for Mario last week and this week for Jay. I really appreciate it. Countdown to the convention. What are you most excited about is one of our topics. Also, it's the economy, stupid, and if you have not read it, Paul Krugman has a great editorial today. Paul Krugman of the New York Times has a wonderful, one of his best columns in a spell, I think, called Know Nothing Politics. So the GOP has found its issue for the 2008 election. For the next 3 months, the party plans to keep chanting, drill here, drill now, drill here, drill now, four legs, good, two legs, bad. Okay, he added the last part, he says. And the debate on energy policy has helped me find the words to something I've been thinking about for a while. Republicans, once hailed as the party of ideas, have become the party of stupid. Now, you and I have known this for a time, but listen up. Now, I don't mean that the GOP politicians on average are any dumber than their Democratic counterparts. I certainly don't mean to question the often frightening smarts of Republican political operatives. What I mean instead is that nothingism, the insistence that there are simple, brute force, instant gratification answers to every problem, and that there's something effeminate and weak about anyone who suggests otherwise, has become the core of the Republican policy and political strategy. The party's de facto slogan has become, "Real men don't think things through." In the case of oil, this takes the form of pretending that more drilling would bring fast relief at the gas pump. In fact, earlier this week, Republicans in Congress actually claimed credit for the recent fall in oil prices. What the experts at the Department of Energy who say it takes years for offshore drilling to yield any oil at all, and even the prices at the pump would be insignificant. But they're still trying to pitch and paint the Democrats as being weak. So the politics of stupid instant gratification, what I call the okie doke. Real men don't really think. Yeah, well, this real woman really does think. Thank you very much. And it's about time we ditched easy, simplistic answers. Look where it's gotten us. Check out AmericanProgress.org and the study on Bush economics. Please. Bill in Denver, welcome to AM 760 Progressive Talk. Good morning.
Good morning. Hey, this real man likes to think, too.
And you have a southern accent and you can think.
Hey, I can outthink Bush, but that's not much.
Yeah.
Well. Anyway, I wanted to talk about what I consider to be the really key elements of both Bushonomics and Reaganomics. And that is the freeloading wealthy. Let's cut the taxes for the wealthy. Let's give them the farm. Let's give them everything. And maybe something good will, I don't even want to call it a trickle. I want to call it a mist down to us.
Mist down economics. I like it.
Because a trickle seems a little bit faster than what we've been experiencing.
Mm-hmm.
They also don't like, and Bush's law, war and not paying for it, leaving it for somebody else to pay for, that's not very fiscally responsible. That's freeloading. Mm-hmm. And I think that, and this is a little sophisticated for your Republican listeners, but I'll throw it out there anyway. The value of the dollar has decreased significantly with this borrow and spend economic policy,
yeah.
If you want. And right now, the American dollar is worth less than the Canadian loonie. And
yeah.
Aaron, that's a tax.
Hey, I used to love to go over to Spave. Thank you very much. I used to love to run up to Canada to Spave, which is spending to save.
Mm-hmm.
No more. Can't do that now.
It's
not
an invisible
at all. They come
tax.
Here. They come down to our shopping malls, but they don't spend as much because we're not a good bargain anymore. This
mm-hmm.
is terrible. Our prices have gone up hugely.
It's an invisible tax.
Yeah.
And but you'll still hear that tired, inaccurate old mantra, well, we don't want to increase taxes. Well, when you're devaluing the dollar, like happened when the Confederacy just printed money and printed money, or the Nazis when they just printed money and printed money, and the inevitable outcome is a currency collapse. And I'm afraid we are in, I hope that we don't see, obviously, I hope we don't see a collapse, but we are seeing a devaluation of our currency based on the failures of three of the worst presidents in modern history, Reagan, Bush, and Bush.
Yeah, Reagan, Bush, and Bush. I don't know whether we'll be able to survive them, but I sure aim to try.
Somebody is going to have to clean up their mess, and I bet the wingnuts are going to just whine and whine and
you
whine.
You kidding? They're in full whine mode, according to my mailbox. They're, whine central, believe you me.
I don't think you've seen anything
yet. Oh, no.
When Obama increases the taxes on the wealthy, there will be whining of a new world Olympic record.
Well, what he should keep pointing out is if you make more money and you pay more tax, you still have more money at the end of the day. Hello.
I suspect that the people making $100 million a year probably aren't quite hurting like the people trying to get by on $15,000, $20,000.
You think? Thank you very much for your call. I really appreciate it, but I do have to jump to traffic. And I'm also going to talk a little bit about the Olympics. Check out the pictures coming out of China. 8 o'clock on the 8th day of the 8th month of the 8th year of this new century. Oh, my goodness gracious. The pictures are amazing. It's going to be quite the celebration. Better TiVo if you're not going to watch it or record it somehow. 303-713-7600. I'm Aaron Hart, filling in on the J. Marvin Show. It is time to check in with John Turk about Colorado's progressive traffic. What's up, John? Hi, this is Aaron Hart. Once again, just to remind you, westbound I-70 is closed at E-70. Nasty accident. A semi rolled over E-470. Excuse me, I stand corrected. E-470. I wrote it down E-70 rather than E-470, even though I know better. I-70, E-470, be careful westbound. Semi rolled over, hit 7 cars at least. There are cars burning on the highway. It has been shut down. Please be careful, and please use alternate routes. And we'll stand by for more traffic with John Turk as need be this morning here. Rough one a little later in the morning during the commute. Be safe, would you please? Ugh, what a terrible-sounding accident. All right, I'm Aaron Hart. This is AM 760 Progressive Talk. Babette in Aurora, welcome to AM 760 and the J. Marvin Show. Hello.
Hi, how are you? I just want to let you know that you're a fantastic host. To me, you hit the ground running every morning this
Thank
week.
You.
And I think you inform us and entertain us and energize us. So I just wanted to respond about the Hillary supporters. I'm one of them. I went from the precinct to state and to support her. And at this point right now, I'm working with the Arapaho along with many other Hillary supporters, and we are canvassing neighborhoods, trying to get people registered to vote.
Good.
And also, you know, wearing Obama stickers and Udall stickers, Pearl Mutter, and Hank Ng. So we're all out there trying to bring about a better America.
I'm glad to hear that, Babette. Would you agree there are some disgruntled Hillary supporters, though, who are still diehard and still... What do they want? Because I could see that I want Barack Obama to talk more about so-called women's issues like health care and care for children and our families.
Well, I want him to want to see that, too. I want her causes to be recognized and energized. But, you know, I'd like to see her as VP... But, you know, you've mentioned governor of New York and also majority leader, a position where she has...
Where she can shine and lead the party.
Exactly.
Amen. And use her
exactly.
considerable power-broking skills. She's amazing, and she's good at crossing across the aisle, too. I think she's
right.
invaluable as a person to work for our party and for our country. And
so
I do not want to see that lost in this, either.
That's the way I feel. And so wherever she wants to be, wherever she could... exercise her strength and influence and help us get to a better place, that's where I'd like to see her. So I've tried to move on, and I think a lot of people have. I mean, no. There are many of us out there just working for the Dems.
Good for you, Babette. I appreciate it, and I look forward to it. I'm sure you'll help us all get elected and deliver us to a better country. Thank you so much. I'm Aaron Hart, filling in for J. Marvin. Once again, there is a terrible accident on westbound I-70 at E-470. A semi has rolled over and hit at least seven cars. There are probably serious injuries. There are cars on fire. That section of the freeway has been closed. Do please be careful, and we'll bring you updates as we go along this morning. It's 8:38 in the morning. Nick in Loveland, welcome to AM760 Progressive Talk and the J. Marvin Show. Good morning.
Good morning, Aaron. How you doing?
I'm pretty swell. You?
Good. Getting up to work. Hey, so I kind of bounce back and forth in the morning sometimes, just depending on what's going on. But I was just listening to FM 93.3 about 15 minutes ago, and they played a blurb. I was talking to John Turk, see if he can look into it a little bit, but they had a blurb on focus on the family out of Colorado Springs.
Right.
Basically talking about praying for torrential, biblical downpours, flood wash, basically 2 minutes prior to Obama's speech on the 28th.
In Invesco. Oh, no. How sad is that? He is so petty. Are you serious? This isn't made up? I can't believe it. I hope we can confirm it.
They actually played the blurb. They played an edited version. They said you could get the unedited version on their FM 93.3 website. But I was just... and fortunately, the guys speaking about it were showing a little favor, I think, towards Barack. And they said, well, I think karma will come back to bite you, and that rain may come about 30 miles south and get you guys.
Again, get you guys good. I mean, you know what I thought is good. Fine, we'll bring umbrellas and ponchos. You think we're afraid of a little rain?
Yeah. I just couldn't believe it. I'm like, this is crazy. They're trying to talk about praying for rain to ruin his speech. Like,
yeah, not to improve the lot of the Colorado farmer who's in crisis, to help out, you know, with people who are losing their crops, you know, over the big drought we've been having. Not bad. Oh, no, we don't want a torrential downpour for that. We want it to ruin Barack Obama's day. What a waste of prayer.
Yeah. Well, I just want to inform you on that, Aaron. I was hoping John would look into it a little bit. Maybe you can get a kick out of it a little bit later.
I'm sure he will, Nick. He's very good at his job. Thank you, Nick in Loveland. I appreciate it.
Have a great day.
What a great tip. Thank you. I'm Aaron Hart. You can't make this stuff up. You know what I mean? Every time I think that they can't possibly be more of a kind of a comedy writer, Focus on the Family steps up to the plate again. Oh, man. Jerry in Boston, welcome, and thank you for joining us all the way from Massachusetts.
Yes, I am, and I say Jerry from Boston because I've only lived in Denver for a relatively short time, and if I said I was Jerry from Denver, right away I'd say something like, park my car, you'd know I was an imposter.
Yeah, I gotcha.
But anyway, I love this conversation where this economics is really going to be, I think, a big thing. Right now, it's been such a struggle to be ahead in the polls when you have the other side attacking you, saying that you want to lose the war for your political gain, which would make you, that would be treason.
That's the
really
meanest.
Like
that's John McCain was forever lost to me. Not that I would ever vote for him because I can't, because he doesn't consider me a person or my rights to be human. But I cannot believe that he said that. That is the worst thing he has said on the campaign trail, without a doubt.
That's about the worst I've ever heard anybody say about somebody else.
Yeah, except for extreme right wing nuts. Yeah.
Yeah, and then of course comparing him to Britney. You know, in Paris, you would hope that people could see through that.
Well, you know what? The most popular, you know, for the first time since the campaign started, because, you know, Barack Obama beats him hands down every week in terms of YouTube hits and everything else, and internet hits, and internet fundraising. But McCain actually outdistanced Barack Obama this particular week, and it was because of the Paris Hilton ad, which is really mean to John McCain. So,
yeah, but I guess that's the silver lining, though. They really don't have much else.
No.
Because in order to get the Republican nomination, McCain, of course, made those switches. But the ones that are really going to haunt him is the tax cut for the wealthy, which he had been opposed to, called it unconscionable. But then he switches because he wants to get the nomination. And unfortunately for him, he's not going to have access to the money that would have come back to the Treasury with those, with doing away with those tax cuts. And I think that's very important, because if you want to change the economy from such an oil-dependent and foreign oil-dependent economy, obviously we have to stimulate the economy in directions of other sources, other
Diversify, absolutely. We have to diversify. If we don't, we need to change or die, literally and figuratively. And that's a familiar statement to you, being from Boston. But we better, if we want to live, we better live free, or we're going to die. And we better, you know, to borrow another. But we had better get on the stick, because if we do not, we are going to fall behind the rest of the world. China, and the opening ceremony, the pictures are absolutely lovely, and I don't begrudge them their celebration at all. But you know what? I want to see my country be healthy and vibrant and growing again. I want to see us to feel proud of ourselves again. It's been a long time.
Well, I think Barack Obama is going to do that.
I do, too. I do, too, Jerry.
By the money that will be saved by leaving Iraq, and the money on the tax cuts that the wealthy will have to pay, gives an opportunity for cash incentives and to change the economy. He can make it happen.
I think so too, and particularly if he has the help of Hillary Clinton and others in the Senate and the House and Nancy Pelosi. Thank you so much for your call. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Yes, indeed. 303-713-7600. An ecstatic China, an ancient nation so disturbed. This is a great lead. I just have to read it to you. An ecstatic China, an ancient nation so determined to be a modern power, finally got its Olympic moment Friday night. With world leaders watching from inside the latticed shell of the National Stadium, the 2008 Beijing Olympics began with an opening ceremony of soaring fireworks, lavish spectacle, and a celebration of Chinese culture and international goodwill. By the way, it's being televised to more than 4 billion people. And the picture is astounding. It's just, it's lovely. It's breathtaking colors, and I'm sure you'll enjoy it tonight at 8 p.m. our time, wherever you are. 303-713-7600. Don't forget, there is a terrible rollover, hit seven cars on at the junction of I-70 and E-470 westbound. It is on fire. A lot of cars, rather, are on fire. So do be careful. Both sides of the highways have now closed, John whispers in my ear. So both sides of the highways are closed, east and westbound. It is one of the nastiest accidents. Well, it's the nastiest accident I've heard about this entire week, and this morning has been rough, rough, rough. So if you can delay going into work, and you have to, I mean, if you're going in that direction, I sure would. 8:46, I'm Aaron Hart. This is AM 760 Progressive Talk. Stand by. Phil in Summit County. Thanks. I'm glad you can hear us way up there in Summit.
Yeah. How you doing, Ann?
Good. How are you?
Good to talk to you. I don't want to get you too loud up here, but I wanted to talk a little bit about Bush. I believe in Obama. I think he can instill confidence. I think he would be the right man for the job. But I try and look for, I'm more of an optimist, and I try and look for, like, the positives in the president. And I just keep thinking to myself, well, I don't necessarily believe in everything Bush has done. But
yeah.
I do look at this.
Your phone is cutting up a little. Can you speak more clearly into the
mic
part? That's okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, better?
I think so.
Okay. I look at Bush, and I think when he came into office, he inherited some pretty bad stuff. I believe he inherited it. Came in 2000, the dot-com bubble burst. Some little mini stock crash. Then 9/11 happens. Then you get the 2007 financial scandals. And I'm thinking to myself, do we ever go in a recession between his whole candidacy with all those tragic events that happened? And I don't, is that how we ever got in a recession? I personally don't know.
I think it was partially that. I think it's because his administration systematically undercut a lot of help that people were getting through various regulatory agencies and others. So the subprime mortgage crisis certainly did not help anything. But this administration, this is the only administration I have ever heard about in our history that cut taxes in wartime. And I think that was a big, big, big mistake.
Right.
Huge mistake.
Admit, when he first came into office,
huge mistake.
He had two hits with the dot-com burst and 9/11. You have to admit that was not his fault.
No, they were pretty bad. I don't think 9/11 was any particular president's fault, I will add. I think that Osama bin Laden was determined to attack the United States, but I do think the Bush administration and many intelligence experts agree dropped the ball in terms of investigating it. Don't ever forget, 2 months before the attacks, he was warned, rather a whole entire month, because it was August. Yesterday, anniversary was day before yesterday, of receiving this daily briefing saying that Osama bin Laden was determined to attack the United States. They knew, and they, you know, one thing I'm grateful for, that guy who was apparently planning to assassinate both Bush and Barack Obama, people ratted him out in the bail bondsman class he was in, probably. And good, because if you brag about killing anybody, somebody should rat you out. I'm sorry, that's just crazy.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, in a serious way, and especially if you've got a lot of guns in your car, you shouldn't be making threats like that anyway,
exactly.
Let's face
exactly.
it. But
just one question. Did we ever go in a recession, though? I don't know, personally. In his 8 years of term?
I think we're in recession now.
Right. But we're not in the earlier, in his first
No. No, we were not in a recession. We were already starting to recover from the dot-com burst of bubble. We were starting to.
Right, but now things have changed.
But the growth has been aimed in almost entirely at the wealthiest top percent in this country.
Right.
In other words, the top, I think, 10% have done better than anybody else by insane margins,
by insane margins,
whereas most regular people's incomes have dropped severely. And the reason that is so crucial, Phil, is because two-thirds of our economy is driven by consumer buying. And when we stop buying, you watch things like oil prices fell. Not because of anything the Republicans did, it's because we stopped buying.
Right. And that's where the recession comes in and all that stuff, right?
Well, recession is a lack of growth, I think, for two consecutive quarters.
Yeah.
And even though that may not, I think that is the definition of it. But whatever the definition is, I think we're in a de facto recession. And thank you so much for your call. I appreciate it. I got to jump to traffic because it's very important to hear more about that accident from John Turk now with Colorado's Progressive Traffic. Hi, this is Aaron Hart on AM 760 Progressive Talk. Both sides of the highway are closed at I-70 westbound, eastbound, near E-470. Don't forget, serious accident. We'll be keeping you up to date on that right here on AM 760 Progressive Talk. And thanks to John Turk, who's providing us with some alternate routes on Smith Road and Gun Club Road. I always want to say Gun Barrel Road, but it's actually Gun Club Road. And the reason is because I grew up on Gun Barrel Road, funnily enough. Rich in Erie, welcome to AM 760 Colorado's Progressive Talk. Good morning.
Thank you very much for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Sure. You too.
Got a question for you, really.
Okay.
Recently received an email, one of those form emails you get every now and then, asking you to sign a petition that's going to go to the president or Congress or whatever. And this one's asking you to sign the petition to prevent George Bush from signing a bill that would allow illegal immigrants to receive Social Security benefits. And that just sounded flat out fishy to me. I wanted to know if you'd heard anything about that.
I have not heard about this email, but it sounds extremely fishy to me.
That's so un-George Bush.
Yeah, no,
he wants to get rid of them, not...
I don't think, and the immigration issue in general, they couldn't get a bill passed, so it's been on the back burner anyway with the energy and the economy and everything else being on the front burner. So I think that's just paranoid rantings of somebody.
Okay,
probably.
That's kind of what I had a feeling.
Thinking, but I don't know for sure. If anybody knows any differently, please correct me, but I don't think It sounds fishy to me, too, in other words, Rich.
Okay. I just wanted to see what I was thinking, too. I'll research it when I get a chance. But thank you very much for your time.
I'll try. I've got to make a pit stop during the break, but I'll try to research it with the limited amount of time I have, too.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. Have a great night.
Sure, Rich. I'm Aaron Hart. This is AM 760 Progressive Talk. Thanks for joining us. I want to lighten up, too. I know we've got a serious accident on the road. We've been talking about economics. I have Martin O'Malley, governor of Maryland, sound to play for you. He talks about what we can do in terms of oil and all of those different issues. And then we have fun articles about Barack Obama and John McCain's popular culture taste. You may be very, very surprised coming up. So we'll talk about that. We'll laugh a little too. And guess what the internet hit of the week was? Oh, you know. See you at the debates, bitches. I'm Aaron Hart.